Thought Leader Thursdays are sponsored by Associated Bank. Whether you're buying, building, or refinancing a home, Associated Bank is dedicated to finding the right mortgage solution for you. Visit associatedbank.com/thoughtleadership. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
It is Thought Leader Thursday here on the Opening Bell. Don Lloyd is here from Associated Bank. He's the Senior Vice President and Manager of Capital Markets, the Foreign Exchange, Rate Swaps, Commodity Derivatives, for a conversation about global markets. And Don, good morning. Welcome back to the Opening Bell.
Steve, good morning. Great to be back.
I don't know where to begin. Maybe just with a quick summary of what's big in your world in the foreign exchange markets.
Interest rates. Got to love the interest rates. The term structure of U.S. interest rates and the term structure, better known as the yield curve, of overseas countries, particularly the Eurozone. With a 10-year treasury in the U.S. through 3%, touched 3.09%, we're into levels that we haven't seen in quite some time, causing some movement in the dollar, causing some movement in equities, certainly causing some movement in the bond market. Looks like the Fed's going to continue to raise rates. That's sort of what's propelling the whole thing. But again, you know, being an international guy, I always look at the relevance or the relativity between the yield curve in the U.S. and the yield curve in other countries. It's causing a lot of movement in a lot of different areas.
After the tax bill, there was a lot of talk about capital spending coming into the markets. Is any of that made it into the foreign markets yet? Is it having an impact?
Capital spending is there. It is certainly, you're seeing companies spend money at a higher rate than they have in the past. The thing that's holding companies back, though, is that we're pretty long into this whole business cycle, this whole recovery cycle. We're hitting 10 years into this recovery cycle. So does it make sense for companies to go out and put a lot of capital investiture into companies if we're looking at moving into a recession or the economy is looking to slow just because of the normal economic cycle? Now, Steve, they've been talking about this for years, about the slowdown and how long can this economic recovery last. Mm-hmm. Maybe we're near the end of it. Maybe we're not. So on one hand, you see companies that want to spend the money. They are spending the money relative to what we came out of, you know, 5 years ago and the economic, how the economic environment was then. But they're still just not pulling the trigger to the point that I'd like to see them to, that's really going to have an impact yet.
Yeah, there had been all kinds of predictions before this bill was done, before it became a law, that we would see a boom, that there would be money flowing everywhere. And I saw one other analyst write that it's so far been remarkably unremarkable.
Yep.
So not so much. What can we expect to push this? What will be pushing it, if anything?
Companies are they're a lot of them are cash rich. They've got money on the sideline to spend. But do you really want to be investing at a level in your plant and equipment and your fixed assets at a level when we could be possibly going into recession? Keep in mind, too, that most companies in the United States aren't the big behemoth companies that are out there. They're middle-sized, smaller type companies that, you know, the capital that they have to spend has got to be well thought out and well planned. And timing does figure into that. So nice tax cuts. You know, capital expenditures, we'll see how that unfolds as it goes on. The interesting thing about a tax cut, and this is the first time we've seen this really going back since World War II, if you want to look at it, is there's been a divergence between the norm and what's happening. And what I mean by that is we had this tax cut. We had this big stimulus that has hit the U.S. economy. And the U.S. economy has responded nicely. And just take a look at unemployment. Unemployment is down 3.9%. The economy is at full employment. There's no question about that. And that whole idea of the tax cut and getting the economy going was to generate tax revenues that was going to begin to reduce the deficit. And that's where we are now in a situation that we haven't seen before, where you've got full unemployment, 3.9% unemployment, and you've got deficits that are just ballooning and continue to balloon out of control. Now, we haven't seen that before. Usually when you have employment gains, unemployment, low unemployment, you see deficits start to respond and come down. That's not the case. They've diverged now. And we haven't seen this before. Now, we go back to all the way back to World War II. We have not seen this before. Not sure what that means. Probably higher U.S. interest rates at some point in time. But again, sort of the boy who cries wolf, we've been calling for that for 20 years, higher U.S. interest rates. We're not seeing it. Really interesting stuff going on, and I think the storm clouds on the horizon are forming and they're coming. What people have to realize is that we've only had two major trends in U.S. interest rates over the last 60 years. We've had interest rates back in the early 1970s go from 2% up to about 15.5% by the 1971s, mid-1970s, and then interest rates started to come back off. Those have been two trends from 1970 till now. So now we're at the turn again. And again, beginning of the third trend of an interest rates going up, it could last another 20 years this way. So it's very interesting what's going on.
It's almost boggles my mind. Hard to imagine that we'd ever get back to 17%.
Why not?
Yeah, why not?
You're sure. I mean, especially if you're seeing at full employment, deficits continuing to balloon out of control like they are. You know, it's sort of like my whole concept of weight loss. You know, the government focuses on, well, we're going to give, you know, tax incentives, we're going to, you know, tax relief, we're going to stimulate the economy, and from the revenues through GDP growth, we're going to pay down the deficits, the deficits are going to improve. No, it's sort of like losing weight. You can't lose weight just by exercise. You got to have exercise and caloric intake moderation. Okay? The government's focusing on one thing, stimulus. Tax relief through stimulus. Well, you got to focus on controlling spending as well. Mm. And that's the way you're going to get your deficits down. This is going to be real interesting to see what happens in the next 3 to 5 years.
Are you saying that sitting at home on the couch eating cookies all night actually adds to your waistline?
Steve, I consider that exercise. I'm moving my arms. It's creating my flexibility. Not a problem.
You mentioned the storm clouds. And, you know, the International Monetary Fund a couple of weeks ago actually said this is the number one threat to global growth. Are the deficits.
Sure.
And deficit spending.
Again, it goes back to the boy who cries wolf. I mean, we've been saying this, the markets have been saying this for decades, and it just doesn't seem to take hold yet. But at what, $1 trillion deficit a year, at what point does it begin to take hold and matter and the markets begin to react to it? Now, maybe I'm old school, but I'm a believer that it does matter and it will have a dramatic impact. And the longer that stays pent up, the more severe the reaction when it comes. So again, my eyes have been big, just like yours went,
right,
you know,
yeah,
for the last 15 years, you know, and I've been holding my breath for the last 15 years. But at some point, and probably when everybody goes to sleep and stops thinking about it, that's when it's going to happen. Or maybe I'm getting it all wrong. Mm. I don't know. I deficits this large just scare the heck out of me. And especially when you're seeing the fiscal stimulus, the full employment, the GDP growth that we're seeing not slowing or having a dent on the deficits that are increasing. That's scary.
Let's talk about Bitcoin for a second.
Sure.
I saw this story, and it's kind of a cool one. And then I have a sort of an anecdote, too, about Bitcoin. But a German bank has started using Bitcoin for international money transfers. Here we go with an interesting idea about Bitcoin.
100% right. Now it's got my attention. You know, Bitcoin, is it going to replace currency? Is it going to replace money? You know, I'm sort of in the skeptical camp of, I'll believe it when I see it. Probably not. I think it's, and we've had that discussion in the past before, where that whole thing, it just hasn't fully developed. Now to use it as a payment mechanism, and not so much Bitcoin, but blockchain behind it, and you can, you know, use the Bitcoin, but you really want to get to the blockchain behind it. That's a very interesting development, and I'm very keen on doing a deep dive into that a little bit more. Right now, international payments are going through a system called SWIFT. SWIFT stands for Society of Worldwide International Financial Telecommunications. It's not a payment system. It's a secured communication system where you can send secure messages. That's all it is. Mm-hmm. And somehow, back in the 1970s, somebody said, well, gee whiz, I can send a secure message to my correspondent bank overseas and have them pay Swiss or yen or pounds to some beneficiary out of my account that sits in London or sits in Paris or sits wherever. And all of a sudden, it sort of morphed, SWIFT sort of morphed into this payment system. But at the end of it all, it's just a secure communication system is all it is. And it's been that way for 40 years. And there's been nothing to challenge it. There's been nothing to replace it. And it sort of has owned the corner in worldwide payments or communications of moving amongst banks. Now, with blockchain, we've got something that actually makes sense from a secured environment and from a messaging environment with 21st century technology that can be instantaneous. Opens up just a whole lot of directions you can go in. I'm excited about it. I'm really excited about the use of Bitcoin, blockchain that really came out of Bitcoin, or Bitcoin came out of blockchain, or card, Apple, court, horse, what can't went first. But this is the evolution that I want to see, the application of these ideas and technologies start to come to real life use, as opposed to this voodoo speculative nature over here. Now it's got some teeth to it. And I'd like to see where this goes.
My anecdote now, one of my favorite shows, Silicon Valley on HBO, they had a discussion about Bitcoin on this last episode. And the guy who was proponent of Bitcoin said, hey, all the people that are poo-pooing Bitcoin right now have dollars. They don't want to lose their dollars to Bitcoin. And I thought for a second, wait a second, that does make a little sense.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Again, the mindset of people that are in the whole Bitcoin thing, it's a far stretch for me. I still have a hard time wrapping my mind around what they're seeing and how they're looking at it. Don't know. But I'm excited about the whole blockchain application, where this is going to go. I would love to see a competitor, an alternative to the whole SWIFT communication or payment system that's out there.
Can we talk about this money changing hands internationally? This story from Mexico is one that's like, how did this happen?
Yeah.
The banking system there misplaced, what, $20 million in transfers?
Oh, what's $20 million between friends, Steve? Come on, yeah. You and I do that monthly.
Is that monthly.
Chump
change?
We do that monthly,
yeah.
Right? No.
Yikes.
What's the lesson of that? What's the moral of that story? I mean, not every country is like the United States when it comes to security, when it comes to checks and balances and banking infrastructure. Mexico strikes pretty close to home, you know, being a neighbor of ours. Mm-hmm. But think of all the other countries that are out there. To me, it just sort of shows the lack of control and regulation that can exist in certain countries, and that banking infrastructure is very different depending on where you go. And as the world leaders continue to develop technology and new payment systems, if you want to look at it that way, they have to remember that the whole world doesn't move with them, but they have to keep the whole world together.
Yeah.
And you can't let that train between, you know, the front and the end of that train get stretched out too far. So everything, innovation's great, but you have to keep the pack together to some extent. Mexico's a perfect example of that, displacing $20 million. Mm-hmm. How can that happen in the Mexico banking system? Mm-hmm. To me, it speaks directly to their security, their checks and balances, their compliance, whatever. They'll get to the end of it. They'll figure out where that money went. You know,
right.
Was it a hack job? Was it inside? Who knows what happened? There's a lesson to be learned there.
For those of us who are investing in emerging markets too, does this raise any sort of red flag for our changing money from maybe even smaller countries than Mexico?
Always have. Banks have a thing that they look at. It's called sovereign risk. So, for example, at Associated Bank, we have countries that we're authorized to have exposure to and those that we don't. And the bank will put specific dollar limits on particular countries, and that's called sovereign risk. How much risk does Associated Bank want with Canada, with Mexico, with fill in the blank, South Africa, with Germany? And those are very specifically defined limits that we have, and that addresses that right there. That, okay, here's a country, what are the risks? If we have assets in that country, and something happens in that country, whether it's banking infrastructure, whether it's geopolitical, whatever it can be, what is the risk that we have? And are we comfortable with that risk, having that exposure if we can't get those assets out somehow? That goes to sovereign risk. So banks are very much on top of that. And that's why some places have a very small amount of sovereign risk, mm-hmm. and some places are unlimited. I don't think we worry too much about Canadian sovereign risk. It's probably one of the, highest limits, if there's any limit there at all. As an example.
Don, always a great conversation. We appreciate you coming in.
Thank you, Steve. Have a good day.
Don Lloyd is the Senior Vice President and Manager of Capital Markets and Foreign Exchange, Rate Swaps, Commodity Derivatives over at Associated Bank. It's our Thought Leader Conversation, and we do it for you every Thursday right here on the Opening Bell. Remember, you can listen to our past conversations at WGNradio.com on the Opening Bell page, and make sure you follow Associated Bank at Associated Biz on Twitter, and head over to AssociatedBank.com/ThoughtLeadership for more on our thought leaders and more conversations there as well.